and welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, man. And you know, Adam, I was walking by Johnson Green, and there was like a giant cloud, and I was gonna stop. Anyway, it would be a violation of CRTC rules, so I'm here. Happy 420 to those who indulge.
Are you saying it was foggy out in Johnson Green today?
It's foggy with a mysterious cloud with an aroma that I couldn't quite pinpoint. But anyway, no, it was raining. I don't think anybody was there, so I completely made all of that up.
Oh, great.
Yes.
That's gonna solidify our fake news bona fides.
Yeah, that's right. That was the only fake news you're going to get from us today.
Anyway, Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today we are going to talk about the French election this Sunday and whether or not another populist pin will fall with the election of Marine Le Pen of the National Front. It looks like a close race, so we'll take a close look at the issues and the odds of another surprise far-right upset. And then by phone, we will have Kitchener-Conestoga MPP Michael Harris. It has been a busy week at Queen's Park, even though they have not been sitting, with new rules for real estate and a budget being tabled 1 week from today. We will talk about all those issues with Mr. Harris and look ahead to how the PCs are going to convince you to vote for them next year. But first, there was a surprise election news this week. Theresa May said she needed a mandate to make the best deal possible for Brexit. Just people... Yeah. People are trying to decide whether or not this is cynical, very cynical move, Scotty. I take it you would probably concede the point. This was fairly cynical of her.
Well, yeah, considering how many times she said, oh, no, there's no need for an election. We will just have the election in 2020 like we were going to have. And yet somehow there's an election. I honestly think that this she's trying to find some kind of mandate for the Brexit and a clear mandate for herself, because as people may or may not know, she wasn't elected. She replaced David Cameron, who essentially ran away when the Brexit went through, along with Boris Johnson and Nigel Farage, who might be running for the UKIP, who are the equivalent of, I would say, the National Front, who we're going to talk about in part two. But UKIP only have one seat. So anyway, in the UK, there needs to be a two-thirds majority vote to have an election early, which is an interesting way to do it. And it sounds like it was resounding. I think it was something like 509 vote margin for the yeses to call it early. So it seems like everybody's anxious, because also, as we know, Jeremy Corbyn with Labour has never... Well, I guess he... Did he? No, he didn't.
No, he wasn't leader last time.
No, so it's a test for him... as well. It's a test for both of them. And the Labour, obviously, closest in the running to potentially become the government. There's a fairly sizable gap. And that is the question, is like, will that gap close? Will the UK public just stick with what they know and let Elizabeth... I knew I was going to say Elizabeth. I said all day... I'm going to commit to... It's the 420. It was fumes, you know.
If you saw Scotty walking around campus, he was like, don't say Elizabeth May. Don't say Elizabeth May.
I've heard it, like CBC, you name it, they all do it. So I'm in good company, I guess. Mm. Theresa May, completely blew it there, needs to find the mandate, and we'll see where all the other lines are drawn. But yeah, they've hit the ground running pretty much.
Yeah, there's a logic to it, and it actually came from the president of the EU, who said that he understands why, because and it might actually help them on this end to have 5 years to shake this all out, rather than negotiating for 2 years and then coming up right at the beginning of a campaign period where Theresa May might be forced to go hard line in order to appease supporters of her party in order to get that re-election. So he seems to be okay with it from a very understandable, pragmatic perspective. I can't get over the fact that, it feels so icky. It feels like when Jean Chrétien in 2000 called the snap election after like 3.5 years. Actually, I don't even think it was 3.5 years.
It was like one of the shortest periods. Like, okay, we're going to go. You don't like it? We're going to go. And he was, who was it? Somebody dared him to do it, right? can't remember what it was. It was like the Stoke Parliament said, okay, well, if you feel that way, call election. And he's like, okay. And then it was like, oh, not again.
I know.
And we
blame.
You got to watch the old lions sometimes. They'll like pull a fast one.
Yeah, Trump
like
didn't invent impulsiveness.
No.
But
okay, we'll go.
But yeah, that feels icky to me because I think she smells blood in the water. I think the early polls have that the conservatives might win 381 seats, which is 51 more than they have right now and 112 more than they need for a majority. Labor will maybe lose up to 47 seats if the polls shake out the way they do. You know, you have UKIP kind of in disarray because the longtime leader of UKIP is Nigel Farage. He hasn't decided if he's going to be running yet. He's certainly not running as leader, and certainly a lot of the appeal of that party had to do with Farage himself.
Yeah, he's pretty much the only guy that might win a seat. They had one MP, but he stepped down. He quit. And I think there was supposedly a by-election in the cards that's now canceled because of what's going on. So that's... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that... And then, of course, there's Labour and Jeremy Corbyn, who a lot of people have said is unelectable, and there's a perceived disarray and a perceived desire on the part of Theresa May to "quote unquote" crush Labour.
We will crush you.
I assume they mean the party and not the working class that they all claim to love so much. But yeah, so it's just on that basis, it seems like all politics. I mean, you could argue that she has a mandate. They aren't going to get a stronger mandate than what they had last year, almost exactly 1 year ago with Brexit. That was a mandate, 51-52%. I can't remember the exact number. But, you know, it screams of political theater. And, I mean, I guess if she gets 51 more seats out of it, it was worth it. What I struggle with is why all the other MPs went along with it, because I remember correctly... Labour alone had enough seats or had enough votes in Parliament to block this, because you needed a two-thirds, supermajority to call an early election. Labour alone could have done that. Why would they go along with it? To me, it would make Theresa May look worse if she goes, okay, we're having an election, and it goes to Parliament, and then they're like, no, we're not. Rather than like, you want to have an election? We're going to have an election, Theresa May. We're going to beat you. And speaking of like the impetuousness and, you know,
you're done.
It's like, you going to call election? We're going to call an election.
Why doesn't everybody just call election? Well, they did essentially all call election by giving it that supermajority, as you say. Yeah. And I think part of it too is that May wants to, let's say, differentiate herself from Cameron. Mm. And I think it sounds like the policy stuff, I'm saying, trial balloons. It's a little late for trial balloons because it's in June. It's June, right?
Right.
Like, it's not as if this...
June 8th, I think.
It's not like the epic election period that we had the last time where it just went on and we're still talking about the election. It's fairly long, but it's not, you know... So some things are floating. Obviously, Brexit, to get a solid on that.
The election hasn't even technically begun. Parliament dissolves on May 4th.
Well, there you go.
So it's just like, this is the...
It's as good as a done deal. And so,
right.
And some of the things they're talking about were, you know, limiting immigration, which sort of appeals to the right, let's say. Not the ultra-right, maybe, but I thought the number was floated was like 100,000 immigrants. That's really, really low, considering. And also the squeeze that's on in the National Health Service. I guess OHIP is the equivalent here. And, you know, doing some tinkering with education. Something interesting that they mentioned was that... Theresa May have mentioned that she wants to build 1 million new public housing units, which is very different from the Cameron years and, of course, an extension of the Thatcher years where people were being encouraged to buy their own homes. And they have something in the UK, if you've never heard of it, called council housing, where housing is run by the state, started after the war with Labour when there were no homes available. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason... why we ended up in this country. But anyway, so there's no houses. So I think she's trying to draw a line, I guess, between, you know, the Cameron years and make it out at least that that her approach is something different. Same with Labour. And Labour have come out today and said that they're not going to seek another Brexit referendum. They're not going to run it again. So they're committed to the fact that the Brexit is going to happen. And I think their approach is going to be, you know, you've heard of hard and soft Brexit. We've talked about it. And their approach is probably going to be of the softer variety, where it's going to be more like, you know, how much of this arrangement can we keep in terms of trade? And so, but again, it's only been a couple of days yet. So if that, so it's an evolving story. And of course, something else was floated today too, was like, they're already running the possibility that there may be a hung parliament, or as we call it, a minority government. And who would back the chosen government? You may remember that the Cameron Tories were backed by the Liberal Democrats, who were clobbered in the last election. But of course, one of the players with the I think they have the third highest seats in terms of the minor players is the Scottish National Party.
Yeah, and they're probably not going to be teaming up with Theresa May.
No, if anything, they'd probably team up with Labour, and it may not even be a formal coalition. But because, Labour are generally these days being crushed in Scotland in terms of the vote. You know, there's no, yeah. I think the other, is it like there's one Conservative, two Labour maybe, and then the rest are SNP, who are in Westminster, and the same with the...
Well, that's another interesting aspect to this is the Scotland angle, because Scotland, of course, is talking about having another referendum. Now they have to sort of wait through this to see how this shakes out.
Yep.
And that's another political angle to this.
Yep. And I think, obviously, Labour would be more friendly to that. I don't know how that would play out. I think they're going to have it regardless of who, or, you know, it's going to happen. It's just a question of, you know, is it hard referendum or soft referendum? Because they very much want to stay in the European Union. So, yeah, I think that referendum is coming regardless, and it may end up a bit of a sideshow in this election, because it will definitely come up in terms of it'll be, I think the Conservative approach will be, it'll be like, Labour is going to facilitate the departure of Scotland from the Union. And then there's poor Northern Ireland that are just sort of left hanging. They don't really have any of the minor... parties in the list of seats. It's Sinn Féin. There's no strong connection to any of the. It's not as if they have a block of Labour or a block of Conservatives in Ireland. It's all a disparate kind of parties. So they're kind of left hanging in this, in terms of, you know, they also wanted to stay in the European Union. And again, the burning question: will we see a united Ireland? It's a possibility.
Yeah,
they're probably going to have a referendum as well. And all of this will play out from whatever happens in June with this election.
The thing that sticks me is that there seems to be almost no political will for Brexit. And even from the people who are trying to go forward on it, Theresa May, because Theresa May was not someone who was pro-Brexit during the campaign, if I remember that correctly. And then after it happened... Cameron, who put the referendum in the first place, you know, resigned. Farage resigned. You know, Boris Johnson, you know, he's still in the government.
Isn't he the foreign minister?
Yeah, but I mean, he doesn't seem to have the soapbox he once did. So
I think you have a bigger soapbox as mayor of London than you do as.
I think so.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's vexing to me that. For what a big, you know, shift this was, that there's, when you look at the people who are charged or have taken upon themselves to lead the Brexit, there just seems to be no political will in it. And I wonder,
sluggish, yeah.
Too, as much as it's cynical, Theresa May maybe wanting to stamp Corbyn underfoot, I also wonder how much of it is like trying to find a reason not to go forward with this quicker, and maybe it's there's so
you
many.
You do it. No, you do it.
Yeah,
you do it.
Because nobody wants to screw this up and then get to the end of the Brexit and find out that, you know, Brexit doesn't solve anything, which is a point I made way back when Brexit happened. It was like, what happens if you go through with this thing and it doesn't solve jack?
That's it. That's the great unknown. And so just quickly, something else has been mentioned today is that Theresa May isn't going to do any debates.
Shut the front
and
door.
And does it sound familiar?
A little bit.
Tino maybe and others. It seems to be a bit of a tactic. But it sounds like the BBC and ITV, two of the major broadcasters in the UK, are just going to go ahead anyway.
Good.
So they're not.
That's what CBC should have done.
Yes.
In our election last time.
Yep. They're not.
Do it.
They're not caving to the threat.
PM
it's
doesn't
just,
want to roll up. That's her business.
More time for people like UKIP to have a voice. Oh, I don't know. But, you know, that's. Hey, if she doesn't want to go, then they should still have them anyway.
Well, I had to look up who the new leader for UKIP was, and I still don't remember his name. Anyway, we have to talk about the French election, too, which is actually happening this Sunday. And speaking of breaking news, this is probably not going to bode well for, you know, for people who don't are hoping that a Frexit doesn't happen. But there was a shooting in Paris. Uh-oh. About an hour ago.
Oh, I missed this.
Paris police officer has been killed. Apparently, there are two gunmen near the Champs-Élysées. Two attackers fired at the police in the city center. This is from the CBC website. An officer was shot dead by an attacker driving by while in a car stopped at a red light, a police union said on Twitter. One assailant's been killed, and I guess another one's at large, although the details are still coming in. I know there is TAC units, so like the armored tactical response cops are on the scene right now. But, I mean, this is probably, considering everything that's happened in Paris in the last, or everything that's happened in France the last 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
This is probably not what they want to hear, what they want to see. Because, you know, I think when looking at the French election, it's a more or less a certainty that, because it happens in two phases, they have the vote this Sunday and then they have a runoff with the leading two candidates. I think it's more or less a certainty that Marie Le Pen is going to take one spot, and, it seems like a three-way race to see who's going to take up the second spot.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of jumping around because at one point it was like at least a four-way race. And, mm-hmm. of course, there was a hint of – well, not a hint. There's several controversies going on. It isn't a French election unless there's some kind of scandal.
Mm-hmm.
Filon, what is Filon's first – we'll call him Filon.
François Filon,
oui, is what I was reading earlier today, that he's kind of back in contention. See, you almost never know when you're reading the media. Is it the media there that is trying to tout one candidate over another? Filon is a right winger, not as far right as Marine Le Pen. There's a broad spectrum in French politics, which is sort of getting hazy now. It's broader now, but it used to just be kind of left and right. And there are a bunch of minor parties just because of their political system. But Marine Le Pen, the National Front National, have been around for a long time, taking over from Dad, and we'll call her a kinder, gentler version. But then there's the typical, I guess we'll call them neoliberal party. It was sort of like the Liberal Party here, who is Marcon.
Yes.
Is a, they call
Emmanuel
him
Emmanuel Marcon.
Marcon has been referred to as like a Trudeau-esque type, a Blair type. He's committed to the European Union, but he's also neoliberal as well. And of course we have Mélenchon on the left.
Jean-Luc Mélenchon
on the left, and supposedly the left are on the rise, depending on what paper you read in the morning or at night or what you're looking at, whether it's Le Monde or whatever.
Mm.
So it's kind of the left is split in itself. The right is sort of split to a degree where you've got like center-right, rightist, and then far-right with Le Pen. And Le Pen and, I'm going to say it, that Le Pen and Trump are pretty much...
they've met before.
Very, so. Very similar. They have a similar groove, and there's a bit of a parallel in that there's parts of France that they call Forgotten France that isn't unlike, you know, the coal fields in the States or the, you know, sort of industrial dead zones like Detroit and Cleveland and places like that. And the vote for Le Pen and her party is huge there. And it isn't necessarily, I mean, it is racism to some degree. And she has softened all of this and said, no, that's not really what we're about. But it's still there. It's not even secretly there, but there's this kind of like, you know, we need to France for the French kind of groove. She's definitely not as outward about it as her father was. He was like blatant. And he came from a time where people were blatant about this, but this, it's more, an undercurrent of, well, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And then the refugee situation, she's still cut of the same cloth, pretty much. Just right. If you want to call her kinder, gentler, maybe, but not by much.
Well, it's with Le Pen, it's she realized that her father's fire and brimstone style, and this came from a 60 Minutes thing I saw with her. I think Anderson Cooper was the one that interviewed her, which, you know, I don't think I would have sent Anderson Cooper on this job. But
he might speak French, doesn't he? Did he live there?
Oh, he might, whatever.
Did he live in Paris?
I think he did. I don't know, anyway. Don't ask me how I know that. I follow him around.
He's not the worst person on CNN, but he's certainly not the best. Anyway, so yeah, she basically forced her father out of the leadership of the National Front and took over because they needed a more acceptable face for their, lack of a better term, racism. But she's not the only one. And I saw this article, Fillon started talking about jihadis and how there need to be measures for dual citizens who go to Iraq or Syria to train beside ISIS fighters, that they should have their citizenship taken away, which we have heard before. And then he called down Macron for not using the French translation of the term Islamic extremism and radical Islam, which, of course, is something else we've heard before. You're not, you know, legit until you use the magic words. About
coded
it.
Or otherwise.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it sounds like none of them really want to touch the extensive French welfare state. I know Fillon has hinted at, and I think this may be to score some points now, that there's a bit of the cut and slash creeping in there. But interestingly enough, Le Pen isn't interested in that. It's not on her radar, but that doesn't mean that it wouldn't happen. But was it? I'm trying to remember the scandal with the. It was Fillon's. They're calling it Penelope Gate. Fillon supposedly had created a fake administrative job for his wife and some people in his family, and that was when he went down a bit in the polls. But
right.
You know, it's amazing that. They seem to forget about these things really quickly. It's like, okay, maybe we should go with Fillon because we don't want Mélenchon, who was a Trotskyist at one point. So we're talking like right across the spectrum, like far left to far right, or probably as far as the reaches you can go within electability.
And Mélenchon is, you know, he came out and he said, I have a plan A and a plan B. And a plan A was going to, like, we're going to do a really hard renegotiation of our place in the EU. Plan B is we're just going to leave. There's going to be no negotiation. We're just going to leave. And then people are like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Are you talking about Frexit? He's like, no, not Frexit. I'm just like, that's plan B.
There was a party and we were just going to go. It's the French exit. We're just going to go. Where did they go? I don't know. Okay.
So, I mean, he's sort of up and down, sort of like his meds. I don't know. It just...
You didn't see my face there. It's okay. It's like,
but yeah,
one day we'll have visuals in here. And be like, what? Yes, he does tend to. There's bluster there, and I guess, you know, if anybody was a Trotskyist as a youth, I don't think that ever really truly leaves you, right? It's just there's just this sort of,
it is part of
the fire there. And well, the party's called La France Insoumise, which means unbowed is the translation, but it's sort of like a more loose translation is like, we will not submit. It almost sounds extremist and like, yeah, you're not going to bend France, man. It's not going to happen on our watch. So you've got all this cast of characters, and it seems a minor character appeared that did really well in the debate from the new anti-capitalist party, a factory worker named Philippe Puteau, and he's like become a bit of a superstar because he's given to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
He's this guy who's just there and telling it like it is. It's like, well, you know, you sold us out and you sold
us out.
He's
the Deepak Oprah of this race.
He's the rebel, right?
Yeah.
So France loves their rebels. So.
And Mélenchon, of course, is also the guy. And if you saw John Oliver, he's also the guy who has been appearing by hologram at some rallies.
Oh, and John Oliver did a...
John Oliver did.
Parodied it, or like...
No, John Oliver did some coverage of the French election.
Oh, I'll have
Sunday,
to check. So hologram of the rallies, that's very futuristic.
Yeah. Well, you know...
It's going to win some votes with the millennials and the geeks like us, I suppose. It's like...
Yeah.
Oh, that's really
he's
cool.
He's like, he's a hologram. Anyway.
And he had Princess Leia with him as well.
Wow, we'll see.
No, I'm just saying
that. We'll see how desperate he gets before Sunday. I don't know. But to update the situation in Paris right now, apparently the dead gunmen, they haven't released names or nationalities yet. And I have a very sick feeling about certain nationalities because the CBC is reporting that the dead gunman was known to security services and the police are searching his home this minute. And then the second suspect apparently arrived by train from Belgium. And of course, there's been a lot of extremism taking the train from Belgium to France to start some stuff. So that's a developing story right there, and we'll have to see how it affects the political situation.
Le Monde isn't saying much, but it sounds like a policeman killed and an assailant abattu injured, wounded, or
I haven't seen anything about
neutralized, I guess.
Yeah, there's one police officer dead, and then one of the assailants is dead.
So neutralized, so, I guess. I mean, yeah,
I haven't heard what the status of the second guy is yet, but they must know who it is if they know he came to Paris by train.
And that's fairly late in the evening, too.
Yeah. What is it, five hours ahead?
It's 11 o'clock there.
Yeah.
Give or take.
Okay. Anyway, we'll have to leave that depressing news there and take a break. We are standing by for a call from Michael Harris, who is the MPP for Kitchener-Conestoga, and we will come back as soon as we have him on the line. And until then, you're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph, 250 watts of community power.
That was the late King Tubby from his album From the Palace of Dub. All songs are dubbed this and dubbed that. And the main reason why we played that is there's a giant marijuana leaf on the front of it. But yeah, I guess we weren't actually advocating anything there, but it's there you go. King Tubby. Essential Smoke and Dub Classics is the name of the album. So whatever floats your boat. Anyway, so...
Yes, and there are many boats floating today because it's very wet outside. Otherwise, there might be other different types of boats floating, but we won't get into the nitty gritty of that. We are joined on the line by Michael Harris. He is the MPP for Kitchener-Conestoga and a member of the Progressive Conservative Caucus, and we are very pleased that he is joining us today here on Open Sources. Michael, how are you?
Not bad. Thanks, guys, for having me.
Not a problem. We regret that you aren't here in person, although I hear it's been a busy day for you.
Yeah, all over the riding. You know what? When it's on legislative, constituency week, it's all over the riding. I had the pleasure of actually being on campus yesterday at the University of Guelph with Leader Patrick Brown. I did a tour and met with a bunch of the officials there, but couldn't get over this afternoon, but I'm happy to join you on the phone.
Well, really appreciate it. Yeah.
We do indeed. And it is interesting that it's been a Guelph-heavy week for you, but, I mean, even though you are on break, there seems to have been a lot going on this week, and obviously we want to talk about some of those issues.
Sure.
First of all, I take it you probably saw or at least read about the Premier's announcement this morning about housing prices, and I know that that's affecting people in your neck of the woods as it's affecting people here in Guelph, and I'm wondering your thoughts.
Well, yeah, clearly, the marketplace in Toronto is having an overflow effect as you head west in communities like Milton, of course, your own city, Guelph, and then Kitchener-Waterloo. I would say that, this is perhaps a made in Ontario situation where, when it comes to economic supply and demand, we've had more of a demand than we have had supply. Obviously, for years, we've limited the ability for new supply to come on the marketplace. A lot of new regulations, red tape, that have led to, frankly, delays. I don't need to tell you, if you have any idea in the Guelph marketplace, you know what development, you know, when they commit to a certain timeline for new construction, you know, it's often a year or even more. My parents actually did that in, over in Guelph and waited significantly longer than what they thought. And it's, of course, goes back to, you know, again, government's inability to get things done in a timely fashion, which has frankly led to the situation that we have today. But we'll see if these measures by government, typically they don't always work well when government interferes with the marketplace, and we'll see the impacts they have in the next little while.
Well, that's certainly been the case with what happened in BC earlier this year. But it seems like Ontario, or at least the Wynne government, seems to recognize that the solution alone isn't in sort of tinkering with prices and adding levies and things. At the same time, I think you're probably correct that, you know, it is a stock issue, of course. There isn't enough stock. There's more interest. There's more people wanting houses than houses. But at the same time, we're in this area faced with the dilemma of having our borders set and being forced to grow out and or grow up and not out anymore. That is also a dilemma.
Yeah, you know, I'll give you an example. In fact, in 2011, the government introduced the Strong Communities Act, and in that, it actually doubled the review times for new housing applications. And so, you know, that's an item that has led to slow reviews, permits, you know, approvals to get some of these sites off the ground, frankly. And so, as you've got Places to Grow Act, the Green Belt, of course, makes a play in there. We all want to protect our sacred, you know, agricultural lands, but there's a balance, of course. You know, not everybody wants to raise a family in a condominium. They want, you know, to raise their family in suburbia, perhaps. And we need to ensure that there's an affordable supply mix of housing stock out there right across the province. Of course, we see the, you know, increasing demand from foreign buyers in Toronto, but we see that now, you know, moving westward.
Right. It's the foreign buyers in Toronto, and then the Toronto buyers are sort of pulling the rug out from local buyers here and in KW, sort of buying up houses sight unseen. So coming at it from the conservative side, and I'm sure this has probably come up in your caucus meetings and in brainstorming about policy going into the election, if you guys were in charge right now, how would you cool the housing market?
Well, I think, you know, dealing with the supply side is a major part of that, ensuring that, you know, when it comes to approved sites, that we, you know, process those in a timely fashion. I think there was an acknowledgement today of some real estate practices and even acknowledgement from the industry itself where there are, you know, in the cases of bad apples that, you know, the law should come down, frankly, very hard on them to ensure that, you know, consumers are protected against some of these perhaps shady practices. You know, look, the industry is occupied mainly by the majority of professionals, but, you know, there are some instances there. So, again, but going back, I think the fundamental way to solve this is on the supply side. Simple economics, increased supply, you know, cut the red tape, reduce the regulatory burden, and get on with some of these new developments that will open up housing stock.
I do think you might be right about that, but we'll have to see how this plays out.
I also think that there's an opportunity for, you know, we saw great success in the home renovation tax credit where people were given significant savings to renovate, you know, their homes through tax incentives. And I think, you know, there's also the incentive for people to stay in their own homes, do a bit of sprucing up here and there, maybe an extension or two. And I think that that's an important route to take as well.
So speaking of the homeowners, we know for sure that a hot button election issue is going to be hydro. Way up there in the ratings of like something that will inevitably be on the front burner. Now, I was kind of having a look at your policy, conservative policy or tentative policy anyway, and the title was kind of like Stop the Hydro Fire Sale, which kind of reminded me of the tone, say, 20 years ago when there was talk of selling elements of hydro and dividing it up and selling hydro in particular. And we know that the wheels are in motion for that to happen. What is your view and your party's view on that in terms of trying to preserve it? I obviously, with Stop the Hydro Fire Sale, you're coming out against it, but what can you tell us about that?
Well, look, electricity prices have risen almost 300% in the last 15 years. You're right, guys. The number one concern on people's minds these days, no matter where they live, frankly, in the province of Ontario, especially those living in, you know, rural communities where delivery charges, you know, often exceed the actual supply cost of electricity coming into their homes. You know, we have to address the structural issues of our hydro system that have really, frankly, led to the increase in prices. And I'll be frank that the Free Energy Act, the Bad Contracts Act, has actually led to, you know, hydro prices today. We're paying significant premiums, guys, for green power. Of course, we all support green energy, but it has to be affordable. We need an affordable supply mix of green energy. And I think you look at the underutilization of water power, which is truly the most greenest form of energy, electricity generation in our province, utilizing, mm-hmm. you know, Quebec's hydroelectric system and their cheap power as a way to procure. You know, we're selling, and in fact, we're giving away power to the Americans, you know, because we're over-generating here in the province of Ontario, while we see, you know, job creators, our manufacturers, like down the road in Cambridge Towel, saying they've thrown in a towel because of high electricity costs. They've closed up shop, and we've seen many of our manufacturers move to the south. And so, you know, it's addressing those structural issues instead of kicking the can down the road like the Liberals have done by simply just reducing your hydro bill by 17%. They're not actually addressing any of the long-term structural issues with our hydro system. And so it's that area that we'll tackle. But, of course, homeowners and small businesses will receive a savings on their electricity bill come the summer. It's those larger businesses, the job creators, you know, in and around our communities that employ people, that are not going to see any savings and have seen some of the largest increases, you know, frankly, that have now put them at an uncompetitive disadvantage.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but a large part of your riding is rural.
Well, actually, no, it's more suburban urban.
Okay.
Kitchener represents roughly 60-some% of the riding that I represent.
Okay.
Of course, we've got the small towns, rural parts of the region of Waterloo, but mm-hmm. the bulk of my riding, population-wise, actually resides in the city of Kitchener.
Right. Yeah, I was just wondering, you probably hear a lot of, you know, some of your, and I know that there's a lot of conservative MPs who are based out of rural ridings, and so I know that you guys probably hear a lot about that from
sure.
your constituents.
Absolutely. I represent the city of Kitchener. We're over 200,000 in population. I consider myself an urban MPP that also has the privilege of representing some small towns and some rural parts. It's one of the best ridings, in fact, in the country because of it.
Of course, you would say that about no matter what riding you were covering.
Well, I get the honor to serve the one I do, and I think it's the best.
Right on.
Fair enough. I want to look ahead next week. This time next week, you'll probably be in the legislature hearing the details of the budget, and it looks like the Liberals have done it and balanced the budget, and I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts about that.
Yeah, well, you know, and look, it's something that since I've been elected, we've harped on the government to actually rein in its spending. In fact, all Ontarians have to live within their means, and unfortunately, government hasn't done so over the last 15 years. We're now supposedly seeing a balanced budget. Of course, that's likely through the sale of Hydro One, through mm-hmm. significant assets that have been in the Ontario purse for some time. Of course, cap and trade revenues will likely be a part of that as well. So it's great to finally see a government that still, you know, is somewhat trying to live within their means. But guys, we've got a significant debt problem. You know, right. We are surpassing now $300 billion, roughly about $1 billion a month in interest payments. That's just simply the interest on the debt itself, equivalent to what we spend on colleges and universities every year across the province. And so that's mind-numbing to think of that number. Of course, we're getting into an election, about a year inside an election. Of course, you'll start to see the spending ramp up to buy votes ahead of an election. I'll wait to see what Thursday brings. But we need to now address the debt situation that's facing Ontarians.
If the Liberals bring in a balanced budget, speaking of elections, if they bring in a balanced budget this year and then next year, and we have 2 years in a row of balanced budgets, does that make it harder for you to run as an opposition MP in the election next year, or is there just too much history?
Yeah, look, I mean, we don't support the fiscal direction, the fiscal policies of this current government. I mean, I could go on, guys, for the entire evening about the waste and scandal and mismanagement of the past 15 years. I mean, we're going to now see in the fall several court cases come up, the Sudbury bribery scandal, the Oakville, Mississauga gas plant deletion of documents. I mean, we're going to have basically a Law and Order Ontario series come out just simply focusing on the criminal investigations facing the Liberal Party. And so, you know what, I think Ontarians, and it's reflective in Kathleen Wynne's poll numbers, Donald Trump, I think, enjoys higher poll support numbers than Kathleen Wynne now in the single digits. And I think that's reflective of people tiring of, constant scandal, waste. You know, people don't mind actually investing more in their province if they see it going to, additional health care, better education, better infrastructure, because there's such a demand and need. You know, guys, I met with the mayor of Guelph yesterday. We talked about high-speed rail, two-way, all-day go, ensuring that students have the ability to connect with Toronto easier, the job creators wanting to set up shop in Guelph or Kitchener, Waterloo, and that mechanism isn't there for them to bring employees into in the morning. And so, but we see dollars wasted, e-health, gas plants, excessive salaries in the public sector. And so, I look forward to the upcoming election, guys, to debate those issues. But the folks I get to talk to every day, whether it be in the coffee shop or in the restaurants, are growing tired, definitely, of Kathleen Wynne. And frankly, we've unfortunately not had a campaign platform in the past that people could get behind. We've had a couple unfortunate elections. We've got a new leader now. We've got a grassroots policy process underway, and we're hopeful that we'll give Ontarians, a much better alternative this time than they've had in the past.
So you can imagine, Michael, that Adam and I stay right on top of political issues, but I'm really glad I looked at your website, because you mentioned something that a bit of a ghost of the past, photo radar. I was shocked. I mean, I'm old enough and have driven long enough that I remember the first time it was like universally panned and hated by people. But from what you're saying, there's the potential of this coming back. And that seems like a kind of coffee shop issue that would also definitely, sort of rise to the top during an election. Tell us about what's going on with the potential of photo radar coming back.
Yeah, well, Bill 65 is before committee now. We'll have an opportunity to hear from people on Monday and Wednesday. But the government's Bill 65 allows communities basically to pass bylaws that would allow for photo radar now, not only in school zones, but in community safety zones. Of course, community safety zones are not defined whatsoever within the Highway Traffic Act, and this would allow, photo radar to be on major highways and expressways on municipal roads. In fact, a city councillor out of Hamilton, if any of your listeners are aware of the link and the Red Hill Creek Expressway, Red Hill Parkway in Hamilton, he suggested that we put photo radar on that. And so, of course, photo radar only takes a picture of a license plate, sends a ticket to the owner of the vehicle, not the perhaps the person making the offense 4 weeks down the road. And I think that other driving habits like distracted driving, driving while impaired, I know we're going to get talking about the legalization of marijuana perhaps, but all of these things factor into ensuring our communities and school zones are safe. And photo radar doesn't address any of those.
You raise an interesting point about the marijuana, because it does seem like a lot of that has been downloaded on the province. And, no matter who wins the next election, that is almost like the first thing that they're going to have to deal with.
Absolutely.
How is it distributed and police too. I know there's been a lot of discussion about police needing training on how do you identify someone who's driving while stoned. And yeah. Speaking of your website, I did notice, I wasn't on your website, but it was an item from the news. You've been trying to pass the Safe Roundabout Act. And I'm curious about the update because I heard, I read the article that it was in its, you were going for a third try on that, and I hadn't, I wasn't able to see what the status of that was.
Well, unfortunately, you know what, the government would rather reach into your pocket to collect more revenue than actually make our roads safer. And I think, you know, anybody living in the region of Waterloo and other municipalities that now see roundabouts as part of their local road infrastructure will know that not all are alike. And we need a consistent look at how we design, build, and actually navigate roundabouts. And I mean, in the region of Waterloo, we have some rather large ones. We're still not sure who actually yields to who, pedestrians or motorists. Do we signal in a roundabout? You know what? Students that are actually getting their license,
right,
should be tested where roundabouts are to ensure that they properly know how to navigate. Markings, you know, in Europe, supposedly the pedestrians cross further back than they do here. But, you know what, told me that I had my head in the sand and it wasn't a real issue. Bigger things. But of course, if you think of my going high up. So,
Michael, we're losing you a little bit there. I'm not sure if you're...
Sorry, you can hear me better now, guys?
Yes, that's great.
Thank you.
Sorry, guys. As I was saying, roundabouts are definitely a highly used word here in our region.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the government hasn't moved on this important road safety initiative, but we'll continue to wait.
I think you made a great point in you were talking in one, the article I was reading, that this isn't... a sort of universal problem on the roads yet. This is something that, I mean, Kitchener-Waterloo has certainly gone whole hog into roundabouts. We are seeing more of that in Guelph, and of course now there's a roundabout on Highway 7 between Guelph and Rockwood even, and it just seemed, this is just one of those things where you would think there'd be a government necessity to sort of address the fact that things are happening in several different regions, and the government is the place where those sort of differences are supposed to be hashed out.
Absolutely. You know what, guys? Roundabouts is not even mentioned. A roundabout isn't even mentioned in the Highway Traffic Act, the overarching, you know, act with that governs our roads in the province of Ontario. And as we see more communities build roundabouts across the province, you know, I think they should be somewhat consistent. If you're in an industrial area, you know, they should factor in that transport trucks are going to use them, which a lot of communities, in fact, don't right now. And you've got trucks that cross over the line, accidents happen, and, you know, these charges don't hold up in court. A lot of difficulty with traffic accidents. And I don't say, hey, here's how we should do it. I say consult the experts and bring forward rules in terms of how we're going to properly build, design, and navigate roundabouts.
Yeah,
something pretty simple, but yet pretty complex for this government to move forward.
They still have the streetcar question on the road test, too, and they exist in like one place in Ontario. You can go like Northern Ontario and the streetcar is on the... Anyway, that was a bit of an aside, but it's, you're right about updating stuff for sure.
We're kind of running out of time, unfortunately, but Michael, I'm wondering... You mentioned that Patrick Brown was, you were with Patrick Brown in Guelph yesterday, and I think that was probably a pretty big deal for all the various places he stopped at, because I think that, you know, for whatever reason, Mr. Brown is still kind of an unknown to a lot of people. So you work with him all the time, and so I'm sure you've gotten to know him pretty well, being your party leader. So can you tell us a little bit about the Michael Brown you know and why you think he might make a good premier?
Well, Patrick Brown is a guy, if you get to know, you'll like a lot. And, you know, I've got to know Patrick now as a colleague. I guess he's over a year as an MPP and an elected leader, of course. There's nobody that I know works harder than Patrick Brown. And he crisscrosses the province 7 days a week, taking meetings at 11 p.m. in the evening, even on weekends. And so, you know what, I think that type of tenacity, hard work, will make great attributes for our premier. And, you know, Patrick's a grassroots local politician. He served his community of Barrie for years at the municipal level, of course, at the federal level. I think he has a great understanding of the needs of local communities. You know, I know that when people get to better know Patrick Brown, they'll like what they see. We'll want him to be premier in 2018, and I'll be alongside Patrick ensuring that we help him do that in every corner of the province, including Guelph and the region of Waterloo.
Well, next you're talking to him, let Patrick know that the Open Sources team would love to talk to him if he's got a minute or two. So I know he's a busy guy, but...
Absolutely. Well, he was on campus yesterday.
Yeah,
he
we missed our big chance, or we didn't know until today. So it's...
That, guys?
Oh, so we just found out today that he was here yesterday. There was a little, there's a display downstairs, like a, you know, a screen or whatever. It was like, Patrick Brown. We're like, Patrick Brown was here, so. He'll be back, obviously, right?
Yeah. I think there's a local paper that perhaps was doing an interview with Patrick. But, hey, guys, you know, another year and a bit before an election, I'm sure he'll be back. You know what? I know that he doesn't shy away from talking to the media. So I'll be for sure to tell him that you guys want to talk to him.
Oh, thanks.
Well, we'd appreciate that, and we're certainly glad you weren't shy with us today, Michael, and we're glad you were able to take the time and talk to us, and maybe we can have you back again in person at some point.
Absolutely, guys, and you know what, frankly, I'm part of the school over there. I'm actually a student at the University of Guelph right now myself, and so, you know what, that community is important to me, so it is. It's an honor to be, you know, a student at the University of Guelph right now. I'm taking my master's in leadership, almost done, guys, another course to go, so, you know what, I'm on campus quite a bit, so for sure, next time I'll definitely make it in studio.
Well, all right. We'll hold you to that. And Michael Harris, thanks so much, and we'll see you around.
Take care, guys. Thanks.
Thank you.
And once again, that was Michael Harris. He is the MPP for Kitchener-Conestoga. Now officially a friend of the show, since
yes.
We know he's around. And so we appreciate him taking some time out to talk to us today. And that is one of the many, many guests we have coming up on Open Sources. Earth Day, our Earth Day show is next week, excuse me. Susan Carney of Transition Guelph and Shane Ward, another friend of the show from Plastic Free Guelph. He'll be joining us to talk about environmental stuff. And also on next week's show, we will have a pre-tape interview that I did with Charlie Angus, who was in town today. It's been a very busy
on Charlie
week.
Angus Day. Yeah,
Charlie
we're saying
Angus
he starts
Day.
In the morning and he's going all night. And there's an event this evening.
Yes, there's an event this evening, but I think is it a bit of a fundraiser?
Card-carrying only, I guess?
I don't know, maybe.
Fundraiser for Charlie Angus's NDP campaign.
I think if you're politically independent and you want to crash, you can probably do that.
Yeah, that'll probably be me, but I
do think it's BYOB,
say,
though.
Get your stuff, Hurts, and get out. I don't know.
So my interview with Charlie Angus we'll have for next week, and then on May the 4th, Ward 1 Dan Gibson... Ward 1 Councillor Dan Gibson will be back with us, and he'll be here in person to talk about the latest goings-on at City Hall. In the meantime, you can stay connected to us at opensourcesguelph.com, on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, and on Twitter at OS_Guelph. And then you can listen to this and previous episodes of Open Sources Guelph on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean. And you can subscribe through iTunes, perhaps soon to be on Stitcher.
Oh, nice.
Stay tuned for that. Anyway, you can connect with me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at a place called The Spanner Book. And you should be able to find us.
Yes.
We are everywhere.
We are on
and
the
remember,
present.
The 4th will be with you.
Absolutely.
Always.
Yes. Absolutely. Stay tuned.
And the 420th will be with you.
That's maybe too far.
Yes.
Stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And of course, next Thursday at 5 p.m., we will be back with more Open Sources, and we will see you then. We'll be right back.